Welcome to What Happened Next, a podcast about new-ish books. My name is Nathan Whitlock, and I'm a writer. On this podcast, I speak to other writers about what happens when their new book is no longer new, and it's time to write another one. I've already had a lot of great conversations about the weirdness and pleasure of being a writer, so please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you do enjoy these episodes, which go up every Monday morning without fail, please tell other people about them. I do this on my own, so it helps a lot. If you want to send me a suggestion for a future guest, or comment on an episode, or just find out more about what I am doing, I have books of my own, hint, hint, please go to nathanwhitlock.ca. My guest on this episode is Rob Benvey. Rob is the author of three novels, including Safety of War and Maintenance, both published by Coach House Books. His writing has appeared in McSweeney's, Dazed, Vice, Joyland, The Puritan, Canadian Notes and Queries, and Best Canadian Essays. He also co-wrote the screenplay for the 2021 film Stanleyville. Rob was a founding member of the band Thrush Hermit and performs and records solo as Tigre Benvey. Rob's most recent novel, Bleeding Light, was published in 2021 by Invisible Press. Author Liz Harmer, who was on the podcast fairly recently, called Bleeding Light bizarre, terrifying, and wise. Rob's upcoming novel, Book of the Flock, will be published by Knopf Canada in 2025. Rob and I talk about how doing novel revisions can be a little bit like a band reunion. How, despite having a successful career as a musician and a songwriter, it might be the case that he was a writer all along. And how being published by a multinational is not quite the same as a band signing with a major label, he hopes. I want to start by making a naked effort to bond with you.
Okay.
Over a quote I came across in an interview with you, an older interview with you, this is from a while ago, about readings and about the idea of doing readings and being read to, and you said that the idea of being read to you by others just drives you nuts. I rarely come across any other writer who will admit that.
Yeah.
Or will say that. I personally hate being read to, and I always have since I was a kid. Is that still the case, or have you kind of mellowed, or do you enjoy it now?
Well, I mean, hate is a strong word, but I don't find it soothing or comforting. Like I find it's a vastly subpar experience to actually reading something myself on the page. And it depends on the material too. But I mean, if someone's like an extremely gifted performer or something, I guess that you can get swept up in that. That's pretty rare though. You know, I go to readings and book launches and stuff like everyone does. And, you know, I'll come clean that I'm almost always there to, out of either like supporting the person if I know them, or I'm interested, you know, just find the book interesting, or it's like a social occasion, or, you know, it's like there's, but the actual, I'm always, as soon as the reading starts, I'm like, okay, I'm thinking about, you know, dinner or like, you know, laundry I need to do or something, you know, it's like, I my mind drifts. And there's few ways to promote books or share books or whatever you want to call it, like to get people excited about your book. Yeah. Like I haven't done a reading in a long time, and some just like the other day asked me to do one in a couple of weeks. And I was like, okay, I'll do it, like to kind of get my chops or whatever you want to call it up to snuff and let people know that I have a book coming out in a little while. But I was like, oh, you know, like they were like, read it for like 25 minutes. I was like, 25 minutes? That's so long. Like, that's so boring. You know, I mean, yeah, there's been occasions where I've been to see an author, you know, especially if it's someone whose work you already know and admire, and then you kind of get entranced by it. But like I remember going to see Martin Amis years ago. And you know, he's a guy, like he's a celebrity, you know, he's famous. And so you're there partly just to kind of like be in the presence of this very famous world, you know, world-renowned author, but he has a real presence, and, you know, a real kind of like demeanor on stage that, you know, commands attention and respect. He just kind of skipped around through the book, and as far as I could tell, was just picking out stuff that had dirty words and sexy stuff in it, because he probably knows these things are kind of boring or can be kind of boring. I admired that, because I was like, yeah, and he kept it short. Like, it was like, there was people were paying good money to go to this thing, and it was still was, you know, maybe like half an hour tops, you know, and then a Q&A and stuff. And I was like, yeah, like that was interesting. Most readings, like, I mean, I'll do them. I mean, I have a daughter and I read to her every night and she seems to not be listening, but then she'll pick up on details. So I guess she actually is listening, but I keep thinking that she's bored out of her mind, but I guess she's absorbing it on some level.
I also want to express some jealousy because you posted something on your Instagram account recently about being off at a cottage for I don't know what length of time to do final edits. That's like a situation, especially someone with kids, that I fantasize about a lot. Is that all done now? Is like the book locked and gone and off to be proofread and there's not much more you can do about it?
No, but this most recent stage is done. I just sent this round of edits back to my editor, actually just sent them yesterday. But I was, yeah, like I had like all the most recent edits to get through, and I knew it was gonna be a lot. And yeah, like you, I mean, I you know, juggle a lot of stuff at home, and found myself with some time to myself, and I was like, hey, I'm gonna get out of the house and go do the proverbial cabin in the woods experience for a few days. But I knew that if I went for like a couple weeks, which I mean, didn't really have the luxury anyway, but that I would go a little insane. So I was like, I just need like a few days to just sit and read my own stuff, which I don't enjoy doing. And in a you know, kind of tranquil setting. As of right now, I mean, we're pretty close. You know, there's always last changes and things like that. It's not copy edited. I mean, the book that I have coming out isn't coming out for almost a year, so there's still changes yet to be made, but the sort of substantial big edits are I hope done. There's a little, you know, I'm sure there's gonna be a little bit back and forth. I've reached a big hurdle, let's put it that way.
You've started to kind of close it in your own mind a little bit, in your own imagination, like this is a closed work. I'm completing this project.
Yeah, I mean I've felt that way in the past too. So, you know, like
You never know.
yeah, I'm not gonna trick myself. I mean, this particular novel, I finished what I felt was a pretty solid manuscript of it a while ago, and then then you do the process of getting people on board with it, and it was with my now agent and stuff, and so you know things move at a glacial pace in publishing, as I'm sure you know sometimes. So depending on the publisher, but like the publisher I'm working with, like they have a pretty long lead time. Like, you know, so from signing the contract to the book coming out, it's like, you know, a little more than 2 years, which is a long time. But then you start to feel like, oh gosh, like what felt like a luxury of time now suddenly feels like things are in a hurry, which is weird. Maybe I'm anticipating further questions, but like I generally don't let anyone read stuff that I'm working on until I'm like, this I can go no further with this. Like this is as good as I can possibly make it. And I've edited it, you know, pretty rigorously and feel like this is, as far as my limited perspective can imagine, publishable. And then I let people read it. And because there's that long time between when I felt like I was done with it until now, getting back into the swing of it, you know, as I'm sure you can imagine, is a little grueling. You know, like, oh, I have to slip back into this story that to mine is kind of sealed. And luckily, like, there was no big disputes with my editor about, like, you know, large scale structural changes or, you know, voice or with these things, that there's no like starting from page one. It was like, this is pretty good. Let's push it to be great, which is the hope. But even that, like, my editor was encouraging me to write more, which was like a little disconcerting because, you know, you're so prepared to cut things. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to sacrifice these. I know there's going to be things that I was going on the limb a little bit with. And, you know, probably an astute editor is going to ask me to cut stuff. And to my mostly pleasure, there was few of not so much of that, and more like, this could be at, you know, more could be done here, more could be fleshed out here. And the challenge of kind of just summing up the creative enthusiasm to dive back into it at the level that I had initial creation is kind of challenging. So I was kind of, you know, at that point, I sort of felt like I was faking it. It's like, I need to like pretend I'm excited about writing more because I'm not really at this point. How about I go to a cabin in the woods and try to make the experience as pleasurable for myself as possible, or as enjoyable, because it's feeling mentally a little grueling. But I was mostly able to do it, and reading your own stuff. You know, every now and then you'll be like, oh wow, I was really onto something there. But for the most part, it's like fighting your that sense of self-loathing most of the time. You know, you have to maintain a positive attitude towards yourself, because otherwise you can just succumb to just utter despair. And it's the most kind of self-absorbed narcissistic despair too. Like no one else cares about your despair at that point. You're just fighting it yourself. So, and you're also just like, this is such a writerly cliche, like, oh, these tortured,
Right.
anguished paragraphs. And it's like, you just got to keep your eyes on the prize, as they say, and like, what's going to make the book the best as it could possibly be.
Yeah, it's it would it, there would be almost no one who could relate to that other than other writers to say like, yeah, my day was terrible because my novel who's cut which is coming out in Knopf next year, I had to like rework parts of it in a cabin.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's shockingly quick how to use a to use the word career, which I don't know if that really applies to any of us really, but like to think of how quickly you go from, I can't believe I finished my first novel, to like, I can't believe I have to edit my novel for this big publisher. And like, it's just like the joys are, they're genuine, they're real, but it's quickly how much that sort of like excitement about reaching a certain milestone passes, because there's always another one to hit.
Is it just that process of like going back into a book that again, you've gotten to a certain point and you feel like it is creatively finished? Is it almost like having to re-enter a relationship that is over, or you know it, or like I remember watching the documentary about the Police reunion, and as much as I dislike Sting, watching it and thinking like, yeah, I would hate to be there too, because this is a thing you were in 30 years ago. Like it doesn't exist anymore, and you're all trying to pretend it still exists. Does it feel that way to sort of like, yeah, I'm now trying to be the Rob Benvie of 2 years ago, you know?
A little bit. I mean, this particular novel came together, I'll say, relatively easily. Like I wrote it, the first manuscript, or the first draft of it, sorry, the first draft of it came about relatively smoothly. And when I was done, I was almost sort of, I had to step back and be like, wow, that went shockingly well. Like, what were the, why is that? And stepping back into it in a much more kind of like surgical way did feel a little, in many ways, kind of like erasing that initial spirit of it. Like this story, it almost felt like not to be corny, but like it felt like kind of just happened. Like I summoned what powers I had as a writer and put them forth into this novel, and out came something that I was, to my great pleasure and surprise, happy with. So getting back into that thrust of energy, like it's, I always think in terms of energy. Like I got to keep the energy. You got to find ways, whatever you can do, to keep your energy high about a project you're working on, especially writing a long book. It's like it goes on over months and months or years, and you got to just like whatever I can do to maintain that energy, that positive energy. And so, they felt that energy was kind of gone, and there was a moment where I felt like, oh, maybe this, I'm not going to find a publisher, and then luckily things turned out otherwise, and so that energy was rekindled, because I'm like, now I'm excited because the book's actually going to exist. And then, oh no, now I got to get back into the writing of it, and how am I going to summon that energy? And that's, I guess that's like the only way you do that is by pretending that you are good at what you're doing, and just being like, well, now it's time to do the thing that I'm meant to do, even though you doubt yourself all the time. So you have no reassurances of knowing whether or not you're actually good at something, other than maybe people tell you are, which, and then you don't believe them, or you just pretend to yourself or tell yourself. I don't know, but maybe I'm speaking more about myself. Maybe other people don't suffer from that constant self-doubt, but I certainly do.
As a counterpoint to that idea of self-doubt, when I saw the deal announcement for the book, I noticed that your author photo, you're wearing a t-shirt in your author photo, just as you are right now.
I'm wearing probably the same t-shirt.
And I thought, that's a flex.
Really? That's really funny. That's funny. There was no, it was not a flex. It was just I wear a lot of t-shirts, but that's really funny. I guess I did. It did. I mean, I don't know if it across. I wasn't even thinking about what I was wearing. I was more thinking about like, do I have any like pimples on my face or something? But
Not that you should
oh,
wear
I
a
was gonna say,
tux, but that like, you know, most authors would be like, oh, I gotta like go buy a shirt and I gotta like it's gotta be a collared shirt because I'm an author.
Well, I'm definitely one of those people who's like, I don't want my picture taken. I don't want my picture taken. But then when I see the pictures, I'm like, I can't stop staring at them, because I'm looking for, I don't know what I'm looking for. Like, I don't know. It's a constant, love hate with oneself, but that's funny. Netflix. I mean, I did have to think recently, like, you start thinking about the design of the book. This one, we haven't got into that at all. But I was like, oh gosh, they're gonna want author photos, and like, it's like, maybe maybe the contrarian to me, or maybe coming from like a rock and roll background way back, like that. You always think about like what you say in a photo, like what are you saying about yourself, and it's like, oh God, it's like on one hand I want people to, take me seriously, and then on the other hand I'm like, I don't want the cliched sort of like frowning, somber photo. Oh, I was gonna say like something called, oh, because you're talking about the police, and I know it's not remotely the same level, but like my old band Freshman, we've done reunions over the years. Like we broke up like 20 years ago, and then it seems like every 10 years we've done a little reunion tour. And I know, again, it's not the same level as the police. It's all very small, but I am familiar with that experience that like Sting would have, where it's like on one hand, these are the songs he wrote, he stands behind them, but he was done with the past. You're done with that moment in your life. And then you kind of revisit it, and it's like, do you either like resist that or embrace that or try to change it or alter it, and I've had that experience a little bit myself, and it fills me with angst, because I'm on one hand I'm a very nostalgic person, on the other hand I want to always keep forward, forward thinking. And so anyways, just when you're describing that situation, I'm like, oh, I can almost relate. I mean, again, I'm not saying I'm Sting, that like how that feels to go back to the old days and getting back. Yeah, again, there is a certain sense of like, when I first started writing this novel, like the very, very first beginnings of it, go back a few years. So it was like around right after my daughter was born. And so I was feeling little stirrings of nostalgia for that time, and things were a little easier and simpler in some ways. I know, it just reminded me as I was going through and reminding me of choices I had made. And it's kind of funny to get back into the, I don't know, the headspace that you had just even just a few years ago, because, things change quickly.
I don't want to dwell on the music thing too much, although I will say when I was doing some looking around research, I did come across the video for French Inhale that someone posted on YouTube. It's not like an official, it's someone just threw it up. It's like a really grainy one.
Okay.
But the information says Thrush Hermit were among Canada's finest live bands until their demise in 1999. And I thought that's a weird way to put it. Like the bus went over the cliff or something like that. Their demise. I do want to try out an idea on you though about that. And I will admit I've tried it out on Meg Remy as well, from who is US Girls when I interviewed her on this podcast, which is the idea of musicians versus writers. And it's a gross generalization and it doesn't hold up, but I still cling to it. And I always feel like writers tend to be too in their heads to really be effective musicians, like performing musicians. Because musicians need to be able to not be in their heads in order to perform, in order to be like in the moment, right there, performing, so that when writers try to perform as musicians, they get caught up in that. And musicians, when they try to write, it's really uncomfortable because now they have to get into their heads and not be performative or as performative, or it's too easy. And then the book is just too performative. It's too cool and fun and kind of surfacey. My sense, like having read your stuff and read your work and your books and your even interviews with you, is I almost get the sense that you were a writer all along. Even though you were a musician, everything you say is about being in your head. You always feel like you're always way in your head. Was that a tension when you were playing music, and did it feel more comfortable when you're like, oh, I can just sit in this solitary space and do this?
I wholeheartedly agree with everything you just said, 1,000%. I mean,
Okay, end of interview. We're
yeah,
done.
that's
That's
it.
great. That's all we
That's
got. Good.
you said it better than I could say it. I mean, I've played music ever since I was a kid, and I love music and have done lots of, been fortunate to have lots of cool experiences and traveled all over the world playing tunes and stuff. But I've always, yeah, from an early age, I realized that whatever my abilities or ideas that I had, and playing music, and I've always been mostly in the kind of like pretty boneheaded rock and roll domain, or like pop rock, you know, it's not like I'm a classical musician or something, but I always, always.
Not like sit down audiences, but always audiences always standing, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And standing, leaving. It was what it was always exciting about music, and especially about like, you know, like rock music was bands or artists or writers who had like who had it was like the idea of it, you know, like the people who had ideas, and usually when they were kind of forward thinking or at least like bringing something new in terms of a point of view, less so than technical ability or even necessarily like there's a, you know, there's a real real strain in rock and pop music that's very conservative, you know, like very traditional in some ways. And I don't traditional music like fiddles, but I mean like you know, you pay homage, you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you pay homage to your forebears, and you know, and not that I was ever like a total squeegee punk, but like what I liked about sort of punk music or punk informed music or pre more primordial sort of punk music was a sort of like sneering at tradition, you know, like to do something, you know, you don't do something to honor this legacy of musicians. You do it to defy it in some way or add to it. And again, like, but my tastes are kind of poppy, so I was never like you know, into super extreme music, but I was always attracted to people who could find, you know, write beautiful or strange music, but also like there was a an idea behind it, you know, and I guess that's a writerly impulse, you know, and yeah, and I've pl been lucky to play and collaborate with people who are what I would consider like, you know, more in that tradition of performers or you know, the tradition of like what is a performing musician who gets on stage and really engages the audience and has like a warm presence and, you know, stagecraft and showmanship. I've never had a knack for that at all. Never really wanted one, but then at the same time, because I'm petty and insecure, I'd be like, "Why is nobody looking at my side of the stage?" It's like, "Oh, because I'm staring at my feet." You know, it's like it's boring. So, and then a few times I tried to break out of that and like, you know, you know, play like solo shows or have like things of my own, and I would try to fake it, but I could tell that, you know, like people really, this guy's only half into it. So, much as I love songwriting and recording and working on records and playing with other people, yeah, I was never there was a certain discomfort at that, you know, it was, or attention at least. One to, you know, bands that I've played in, like that band Thrushmore we were talking about, like I know as I was an annoying person to be in a band with because one day I'd have one I you know one take on things and the next day I'd be like, ah, that thing I talked about yesterday, that was forget that, you know, and that sort of vision of like how does this fit into some kind of not canon but like you know, like a tradition of rock music and you know, what are we doing? How do we stand alongside our heroes and then emulate them, you know, like wear cool clothes and do a little dance on stage and stuff. And I was always like, oh, you know, like that's it's just not my bag, you know, but I recognize that that's what most people like. You know, you go to a show, you don't want to go there and be bored. So my level and my level the level of my confidence and my abilities doing that stuff would go wildly up and down. You know, some days I'd be like, I'm the best, and some days I was like, what am I bothering with this? And I think maybe because, yeah, as you pointed out, I was, you know, writing stories and poems and things like that, like from a very early age. And so it was always, yeah, a kind of inner mental world is where I dwelled. That doesn't always translate to awesome jams. You know, I mean, yeah, so it's a more of a writerly impulse. And then when I embraced writing, particularly prose and even more particularly fiction in like my 20s and really dug into that, and it sort of coincided with me playing a little less music or less thinking that that's what I was meant to do. I mean, I've always played music to some degree, but like as my primary, you know, reason to get up in the morning. Yeah, I think I found a certain confidence or you know felt more at home doing that, even though I mean, but it's like it's a hard thing to swallow because you know going out and touring and playing shows and being with your buddies is a lot of fun and you get people clapping for you and you know, like I mean well or you get zero people clapping for you which also happens sometimes, but you know you're out in the world doing the thing and with a writerly life, you know, the audience is generally smaller, or I mean, well, you know, or it's less.
There's not as much beer involved. There's not as much cheering involved.
Yeah, exactly. And certainly not as mu that much cheering. But you know, at the same time, whenever I would always feel uncomfortable with that stuff too. Like I always feel like, what is this artifice? I'm getting on stage, I'm performing, and you know, like I always wanted the song or the music to be the thing people were cheering, not my the pants I was wearing. You know, like I,
Right.
you know, not my cool vibe. You know, and that was a lot of tension and discomfort because I'm like, what I love and what I aspire to be are maybe sometimes kind of at odds. But you know, and then, but now I'm old enough now that I'm not really rocking stages as much, and so I'm probably a little more calm because of it.
Did that tension also come out in the books themselves? Like, I mean, you've even called your first book a flute, but have you, over the series of writing, more and more books, has it become less of a thing of like, yeah, it's this other creative outlet that I've got, and I'll throw crazy things and crazy stories out there, and more of like, no, this is actually like a central outlet of my, this is where I actually say something about myself and the world and, express myself.
I would definitely say so. I mean, even, you know, yeah, like the first book, I mean, I think maybe it's more of a fluke in that it actually got published because it's a kind of slightly amateurish, even though I think it's got its charms. And I didn't know anyone in the publishing world at all. Like I didn't even know, I knew maybe a couple of writers, but I didn't know anyone. I mean, everyone I knew who was sort of a creative individual was in the music world. Yeah, in terms of that shift to going from just flailing for piecing something together to actually having a bit of a vision for it. I think, yeah, I think that has happened. You know, hopefully the more you do something, the better you get at it, or at least you get better at your process. That's something, I mean, if there is a lesson or whatever you want to call it, that I learned out of playing music is that if you enjoy it and keep at it, you'll get closer to producing something that you stand behind. Though there's an argument to be made that, you know, everyone's first album is their best album, but for me, it was like, you know, because I don't feel like I was put on the earth with like God-given musical talents. Anything I learned to do, I had to learn to do. And with writing, I think I maybe had a bit more of a natural knack to it, but you know, I've had to learn how to do it, and or teach myself, or learn. You learn by reading, you know. And with music, you learn how to do it by listening, and with writing, you learn. Principally, I think through reading a lot. Yeah, it's become less. I mean, the first novel I wrote, which is called Safety of War, was a real kind of. It wasn't the first novel like that I had finished of my own, but it's the first thing I ever tried to get published, and it was published. But it was a real like a grab bag experience because I was writing it. I didn't really have like a thematic intent necessarily. I had a bunch of ideas patched together, and because of that, it was hard to write. And that same experience sort of happened with the following two that I published, but less so. Like they were, it's both, all of them have been a little patched together. The understanding of, I don't know, just a little more command over your work.
There's a little more intention that comes in, like this is the work I wanted to put out. This isn't.
I think that, and I think even though that seems like strategic and crafty and maybe opposed to the sort of romantic idea we have of just gushing and sort of like, you know, the creative act is just a putting it just comes from your soul and you know, you don't mediate it. But I've come to believe that sort of anything like that's not true. That the spark or the artistic or whatever you know, however you want to romanticize it comes from the refinement of that vision. You know, like that's not cold, crafty, like mercenary work. That's, you know, like that's the work. That's the artistic work, you know. And in that respect, we're more like, I don't know, like the, I guess, you know, it's, you don't want to use the word discipline, but there's a certain discipline aspect to it where you just do it, repeat, get better at it, understand it, read back, you know. And it's probably like not fun to hear, you know, for non-writers because they want to think that, you know, they all spill from your guts and everything's just like this.
You're just sort of barfing this out emotionally.
Exactly. And there's an aspect of that. There's some of that too, but it's less of a barf and it's more of sort of just a slow regurgitation of acid reflux, you know, over several years.
It's also learning to spot the good barf
Exactly.
and separate the good and be like, oh, that's good barf, and the rest can just,
You know, you
it's
have one
just.
of those really good, satisfying, purging barfs, and Not that I'm endorsing barfing, but I mean, sometimes it feels good. So.
Actually, this weirdly, this metaphor works nicely because I just wanted to shift from the like the internal process to a little more of like external, the business, the and external expectations in the sense
Barf.
of I know, sorry. Well, I mean, you again, I'm not going to harp on the thrush hermit thing, but you do have the experience from being a musician of working with an independent, a label, putting out with smaller expectations, and then going to, a large label, and suddenly everything kind of shifts in terms of budget, in terms of, but also in terms of expectations, where you're sort of in that realm a bit now. I mean, publishing Knopf is not quite like being flown to LA or wherever you were flown to, or, and I assume your editor is not quite the equivalent of like Steve Albini is would be, but there is this shift, and you've seen this before, and you have probably many other musician friends who've been this to this too. Is there a part of you that like the still unrefined punk part of you that's still like, I gotta keep an eye on this? Like, we are moving from Coach House and Invisible, which are these small, independent, very personal, very intimate operations, to multinational land.
I mean that parallel has crossed my mind.
And by the way, I am not setting up like, are you selling out situation? Like, I have no agenda for that. Just in terms of like your own feelings, like, oh, this book has to do something differently in the world, or has to behave differently. And not even just sales, but more like, does it have to be a more booky book for it to exist there?
I mean I'm gonna be fully honest and say yes, it does feel that way a little bit. Yeah, having been in the music world, and I've put out records with like tiny, tiny labels that were put up by like one person, and then exactly like big American major labels, and where you have a budget and stuff. And but the sort of cliche is sort of true that at the end of it, you just have to be like it's just your own relationship to the stuff you're making that's gonna make you feel good or bad, And my old band, Freshman, this is going back decades, but we went from being a small band in Halifax, independent labels, to getting signed to Elektra, which is like a big major label, American US major label, which was such a significant shift in the world we were in. But it was fun because we were young and we were a little gang, and so we could sort of laugh about it together. And even though we were excited and our imaginations ran wild, like where are we going to be stars? What is going to happen here? We were still musically in very much a kind of indie rock world. Like the bands that we admired were like Pavement or the Grifters or Sonic Youth or stuff like that, or and our friends back at home. We cared more about what our peer bands back home would think about us than like audiences in LA or something. Probably in some ways to our detriment, because we never really that thing I was talking about before of like putting on a show, and like each of us we sort of did it halfway. Like we always had one foot in that sort of fuck this kind of attitude, and that's not the way to become a world famous rock star. But we kind of kept a shred of our integrity. Now that said, we signed up with this big major label and knew pretty much from the get-go that like we're not, that they don't love us. They think this weird little oddity, and you get the fax like 2 months after your record comes out saying, since we are no longer marketing your album, we will not be providing you weekly SoundScan numbers. And it's just like we just basically dropped on release, and which was dispiriting at the time. And in the end, it kind of worked out because we still had enough money to stay afloat, and then for our final sort of stage of our that band's existence, we kind of grabbed the reins back to ourselves and kind of went back to an indie rock world, and it was better for it. But the parallel in publishing, I don't know, because my relationship with Knopf is so new. Right now, we're in just totally in the editorial stage. Like I've just only been communicating with my editor, and it's going really well so far. And there, and knowing that you can have bad experiences with small independent labels or publishers, there's just as many liars and crooks in that world. Luckily, I'm not. That's not anyone I've dealt with. Everyone I've dealt with has been very supportive.
Yeah, let's name names. Let's
Yeah,
get
exactly. Alana Wilcox, you're a traitor to the cause. No, Atlanta's the best. But you know, but also that sort of implies me even saying all this stuff that I had the luxury of choosing whatever publisher I wanted. I mean, the circumstances were such that like I when I had this manuscript good to go, and I had also never worked with an agent before, so now I have an agent, and that's fantastic. I mean, my agent's great, and not having to hustle is like. You know, I can't stand that sort of self-promotion, sort of like just begging people to take you seriously, just trying to get think people excited about your stuff. Like I just am not good at that. People can tell I'm bad at it. I'm uncomfortable with it, so I'm just happy to relinquish that aspect of it to somebody else. But then you know, and then so you know, you start looking for a publisher and get people excited, and you know, like I think it was a real confidence boost that like several publishers were interested in it, and even the ones that sort of said the timing doesn't work out were into it. Or were like, you know, there was it was it, I could tell people were warming up to it, so that was a nice sort of confirmation that I was onto something good. Yeah, the circumstances with Knopf worked out really well. But I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, like a year from now, I might be back here telling you how awful it is. I mean, I hope not, but it's brand new, so. But I do think, yeah, it changes the expectations a little bit. But I think I worry this is going to sound really cocky, but this particular novel, I was aware of it more as like, I felt like I kind of sort of done my sort of apprentice work a little bit with the previous stuff. And this one is not like, it doesn't have an overtly autobiographical element to it. Like, I was very conscious about trying to tell a well-honed story. Right, and it's much more of a novel with an identifiable structure, an extremely identifiable structure. And I wanted it to feel kind of like elemental and strong. And I did more work in outlining the beats of it, which maybe came from because I'd done some screenwriting and stuff. So it made me much more aware of like a satisfying structure. And that's something I really wanted. So to know that. The end result, you know, whether it's a piece of garbage or not, like that'll be yet to be seen. But like, I know that it works on what it's attempting to do. I felt more confident about this than anything else I had done before. But that level of confidence was quite low before, so now I'm just back to hopefully a normal level of confidence.
If you get a t if you get an email, a few months out from the book being released, and this and it's from your publicist, the subject line's just about the t-shirt. Will you even open it, or you would just pretend you didn't get that one?
It's a tough one because you know you get sometimes you just gotta wear the t-shirt. I don't know. In all seriousness, I mean, like, what is the criterion separating from a perceived success or perceived failure in the Canadian publishing world? Many books come out, they sell zero, some of mine, and then what's a success? You know, you and I probably have a good idea of what those numbers might be, and then the audiences are small. It's very insular. You know, like you go to launches and it's a lot of the same people. You know, so. That's not to say that's bad. I think that's kind of good. I mean, it'd be nice if people were making more money and selling more books and getting more airplay and all that stuff. I think having a sort of niche community has more benefit to the world than the mainstream world infiltrating a niche community, if that means. Like, I'd rather see people writing weird books, strange, unexpected books, having them come out and blow a few minds. You know, if you want to compare it to the indie rock world, like that band Thrushmore that I was talking about, part of us getting signed to a major label was that sort of post-Nirvana, post-grunge rush of the late 90s, where like suddenly all these like marketing companies were throwing money. You know, we were offered, I don't know if people remember this, like suddenly every band in Canada was touring in a tour bus with a huge like Durex condoms or Export A cigarettes logo on the side. And we were offered all that stuff. And we were like, are you kidding me? Like, we're not going to like, it doesn't, even if it helps me pay my rent, we're not going to drive around in a cigarette bus, you know, like, and so if suddenly like authors on like, you know, Anansi or Koch House or Invisible or whoever are suddenly like all this marketing money is like they're getting offering like endorsement deals from, you know, like you name it, I don't even know what, you know, like Microsoft or something, like that's not going to be to the benefit of the books. And it's not going to be the benefit of the authors in the long run. You know, I mean, a few of them will help pay their mortgages and stuff, but it's never going to be, that's not good. You know, I think it's kind of nice. that, for independent things to stay kind of independent. I say that as someone who just has a book coming out with a non-independent publisher. Getting back to my first point, it's like the world is not that different. It's like the only difference maybe is that like you have a couple more people in an office doing publicity for you as opposed to like one overworked person doing it part-time or something. But the disparity is not like limousines and, the gutter.
We'll return to this conversation when I see the like Facebook.com presents Rob Benvey's new book, and we've created an app.
Yeah. What would that app even do?
I don't know. It'd make you feel really bad, I think. It would just like most apps.
Yeah, exactly. Just sending you daily affirmations of how terrible you are.
What Happened Next is produced and edited by me. The music playing under my voice is by the great Alex Lukashevsky, who is letting me use it for free. You can find more of Alex's music at alukashevsky.bandcamp.com. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. There will be a new episode every Monday. Please buy more books, and not just new ones.